You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Some dogs look at you like you're insane.
Notice your dog's intelligence is different to yours.
We're killing our dogs. Wild and Woolly welcome wagon.
The outside of a dog is really, really good. The inside of a person.
Centricity.
Hello, and welcome to episode 87 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, you can hear what I found out when I spent the day at a dog's trust centre.
You have to have a love of animals. You say, if you don't care, don't work here.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
We also have the Dogcast Radio news and my thoughts on whether our dogs love us. But before all that, we have an intriguing interview with author and doctor Dawn Marcus, whose book, Fit as Fido, reveals life and health lessons we can all learn from our dogs. What I wanted to know first of all was what, or rather who, was the inspiration for the book?
Well, I've been a physician forever and soon learned after starting to treat patients that you really can't fix most problems with just a pill, but have to really involve a lot of lifestyle changes and work on people's diet and sleeping habits and exercise, etc. So for years I've been preaching all of these things to patients. And when we got the Wheaton Terrier, you know, I noticed in my own life it was much easier to have meals on a regular schedule, to make sure you were sleeping regularly, to be exercising more. And my husband and I noticed that because of the dog, our own lifestyle habits had really improved a lot. You know, we had lost weight. You know, you're making sure you're exercising regularly. Your mood's better. There's always something to laugh at with the dog. And that was really sort of the inspiration that, you know, all of those things I've been telling patients for years to put into practice and probably had not been doing successfully myself, I found I was really able to do successfully when I had that dog there as my little trainer, you know, pushing me along to have those healthy lifestyle habits.
Yeah, yeah. And there's many days when, you know, it's maybe raining or it's cold or alternatively it's hot and you think, I just would not have come out today if I didn't have to walk the dog.
Right. Yeah, they've actually done research studies to figure out why is it people don't follow through with exercise programs, because frankly, we all know we should exercise and eat right and sleep and all those good things. And when they've asked people, why is it, there's always a lot of good excuses, and the weather's a good excuse, and I'm too busy, and all kinds of things. But one of the things they've also found is for people who successfully do maintain an exercise program, one of the real big factors that relieves those barriers is having support for your exercise program, which could be, you know, the very loyal friend who never drops out of the exercise, which usually it's very hard to find, or having something like a dog, which again, you know, like you're saying, the dog always wants to go out and walk and always needs to walk and play and all those good things. And I think a lot of people will feel guilty about not walking the dog and don't have that same level of guilt about not walking themselves. So, you know, the dog really becomes a good way to motivate you to do those things that you know you should be doing, but unfortunately we don't bother to take the time to do for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I knew that, you know, having a dog was good for you in a variety of ways, but having looked at your book, I only knew a tiny, tiny part of, you know, the ways that your dog actually is good for you. So how, what are the health benefits of having a dog?
There's actually a lot of different health benefits. You know, the dog really helps you both physically and also helps you emotionally. From a physical standpoint, people who are dog walkers or do own a dog and consequently tend to be out exercising their dog tend to be more physically fit. They're in better shape. They are less likely to be obese. And if they are overweight and get a dog, they're more likely to lose weight than those, you know, who are not dog owners. They've also looked at things like your risk for heart disease, high blood pressure, which is also lower when you have a dog as well, and even blood triglyceride levels, which are one of those, you know, bad blood lipids that we're always trying to get lower. They've actually found that those levels are lower in people who own dogs compared to non-dog owners. So you actually reap a whole host of health benefits rather than just, well, I exercise a bit more, and that's a good thing. But actually you get a wide range of health benefits by being around a dog and having a dog in your life.
Yeah. So we've got sort of, you know, general health benefits. You said it sort of helps keep your weight down and things like that. But it actually helps you have a healthy emotional state, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think in one sense, you know, we all know that by having a dog around, you feel, happier and healthier. And, you know, dogs are always doing humorous things that it's hard not to smile at. My one dog is trained as a therapy dog and comes with me to the hospital. And it's really amazing. If I walk to the hospital by myself, despite the fact that I'm such a wonderful and charming person, people will often just pass by me and maintain that scowl on their face. But when I have the dog with me, it doesn't matter, you know, how someone's day is. They're walking down the hall, you know, grumbling, stressed out, annoyed with whatever. And as soon as they see Weedy, they just stop, their face lights up, and there's just a whole change in their demeanor, you know, from those few minutes of, oh, what a cute dog, what kind is it, petting him. And that really translates to, you know, health benefits for them as well as feeling better.
Yeah. It's fun. As you were talking about all the benefits, I was thinking one of them has to be that you almost, you know, when you're out on the walk, you almost have to step it down again. Although you're getting the walking in, you know, you do bump into other dog walkers and you start to talk and you do get buoyed up with that. You know, you sort of have that, your morale boosted just by being friendly with people.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. They've done a lot of studies, especially in seniors, looking at what happens if you're more socially engaged or less socially engaged, and being engaged not just with family members but with, you know, other social acquaintances and friends is really important for maintaining good heart health. It's important for their mood. It's important for maintaining long-term memory. And people who are dog owners tend to have a longer life than non-owners. So clearly there's a lot of, you know, really important health benefits to go through with. They did a really neat study where they looked at seniors to see, you know, what does having a dog when you walk, you know, how does that really change your behavior? And they took folks who had dogs and they had them go out and walk with their dog and walk without their dogs. And they took little tape recorders and recorded their conversations. And when folks are walking with the dog, they tended to talk about the dog and things that were happening in the present day. And they also tended to have many more encounters with people as they would go along their walk than they would otherwise. And then when they walked without the dog, they tended not to be as involved with other people. They wouldn't stop and have those conversations. And when they did have conversations, the conversations were mainly about problems in their health and problems in the past. So you really changed the whole flavor of the walk from rather, you know, than being this, you know, fairly negative focus on, you know, things that you can't necessarily change and aren't making you happy, to being a very positive, getting involved with others and being more socially engaged, which is really important, you know, for all of us, particularly for seniors.
Yeah. Now, I was really interested in the section about how it sort of helps seniors, because you've got comments or questions from you know, real people, if you like. And one was sort of, you know, oh, I don't, you know, I will worry about my mother or father, you know, falling over the dog, or, you know, and it was the negative things, or finding time to look after their dog. But it actually, the benefits do outweigh any problems, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, potentially, you know, it really depends on the health of the senior. I think it's always a mistake to have, you know, the senior living alone and say, oh, grandpa will be really happy if, you know, we put a little Yorkie running around the house and that'll keep him busy. And, you know, then you have, you know, potentially a fairly active small dog who can get tangled up in someone's feet. So you really do need to make sure that, you know, if you're putting a dog in the home, that it's, you know, the person can care for it and they want a dog. But even for the senior who doesn't own a dog, you can get good dog benefits by having that person either walk the neighbor's dog, or if you're the neighbor of an elderly person, taking that person out with you when you go for the walk. The senior can volunteer at an animal shelter and do some dog walking there. So there are good ways to get involved with dogs without necessarily having to own one on your own if that's not possible.
Yeah. Oh, that's great ideas. As you say, that's the benefits without the commitment, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, now, there's various sections in the book about what we can learn from having a dog in our lives and sort of, you know, observing them. One that really intrigues me is play like a dog. So what does that involve?
Well, a couple of different things. You know, the one thing is dogs really understand that play is very important. And you always hear people talk about this with small children, that it's important for them to get engaged in play, and play is an important part of their lives. But then suddenly we become adults, and it's all about work. And you need, you know, to do your work. And then if you're not working, you know, you may just be sitting around watching television. But play just really is a luxury that, you know, that many people feel is not important for them. Whereas the dog understands that being in, you know, physically active, being engaged, being out there doing something is a very important part of every day. So for the dog, you know, play is one of their most important activities. And hopefully they can translate that. You know, to the person or people in their lives. The other thing that I think scares some people about getting involved in exercise or trying to get more fit is people often think that in order to get health benefits from being fit or exercising, you really have to be huffing and puffing, working up a big sweat, you know, going to the gym somewhere or getting involved in an organized class. And really, your dog knows you don't need to do that. And they've actually shown through studies that you can get great health benefits by doing simple things like walking the dog you know, every day or 5 days a week gives you tremendous health benefits. So, you know, looking at how the dog behaves with his play can really be healthy for the dog, and it's also can be translated into good health benefits for you too.
Yeah, yeah. It's that's interesting because, I mean, I think as well that when we're children or youngsters, you know, you sort of, you are encouraged to do creative things and sort of, you know, play an instrument or whatever. And then, as you say, as soon as you sort of hit about 18, it's like, put that aside now, be a grown up and sort of, you know, do proper things. As you say, do work or do something useful. But you lose that kind of creative outlet, don't you?
Right. And actually, one of the chapters at the end of the book talks about the importance of teaching an old dog new tricks, which really gets into that it's not just being physically active, but as we get older, we need to, you know, like our dogs, always be interested and curious in new things and not be afraid to learn something new, try something new, you know, take a class, do something different from what you've done before, because it's really important for us, especially as we age, to keep ourselves mentally alert so that, you know, we do maintain, you know, good functions, you know, as we go through our older years. And also it just makes us more interested and enthusiastic, and, you know, there's something fun and exciting to talk about rather than just what you're doing at work.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting you say that, because during this last year, I've made a real effort. I have a special birthday this year, which is the 20th anniversary of my 20th birthday, shall we say. And so, you know, I've kind of made an effort this year that this is the year that Buddy's age overtakes mine. And so we've tried lots of new things. And one of the things we tried was agility. And a couple of things, sort of, I would never choose to run. You know, I'll walk and walk and walk him, but I wouldn't run. But because there's a point to it, because it's agility and I have to actually move, you know, that was really interesting that I did it because there was a point to it. We were doing something together. But the other thing that I found was it was like a puzzle. And it wasn't just a physical workout. It was, you know, I had to think about where I was standing, which arm will I use, how will my tone of voice be, where am I going to move to next. And that was really interesting. But his attitude to it really taught me how to do it, because I could get quite stressed about it. But he would sort of do what was expected of him, and then he'd run off and go, I'm just going to go and try this piece of equipment and see what this does. So he had this really, I'm going to enjoy this attitude, which was brilliant, excellent.
Right, and I think it's important, you know, as we go through our adult years to maintain that, you know, like the dog, just finding something where, wow, that's really exciting, and you know, like every day is just a new excitement is going to come our way. And, you know, trying to keep yourself enthusiastic and interested, which often means finding new things. And especially as we're adults, finding something that's new and exciting, whether it's a new and exciting class, you know, taking the dog to a new dog park, going on a different route. I know when I walk my dog, one of the things that, you know, I'll try to do is as he's stopping and looking and sniffing things, you know, to sort of look, well, what is it that's interesting him? And a lot of times you can really find, you know, fascinating things that way that you may not have looked at before. And even doing things like as he's picking up his pace, to run a little faster, then slow down when you come to cracks in the sidewalk, jump over them or skip instead of just walking, you know, at a little march. And that really helps keep up that level of enthusiasm, you know, which is good for your mood. It's good, you know, for keeping you more physically fit and using more muscles and joints. And it does tend to, you know, give people, you know, a nice boost of enthusiasm that often will carry them throughout the day.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of, do you feel and have you found that the way a dog approaches the world, you know, I'm talking about sort of, I have a Labrador and a Bichon, and they're both such friendly dogs, and everybody, every other person, every other dog, you know, is a potential friend that they've got to go out and meet. You know, is that a good example to follow?
Oh, I think that's a great example. One of the biggest challenges I had with Weedy was he's just a very, very social dog, which is why I had wanted him to become a therapy dog. But as part of the therapy dog testing, he needs to be able to sit and let dogs pass and not become engaged in that with them, which was very difficult for him. So what we started doing was every time we would walk and he would see a dog, he had to sit, wait for the dog to approach, and then, you know, he would greet the dog. And he really took this very seriously. And every time, you know, a person or a dog would approach, you know, he would sit. And sometimes, you know, I would be a little rushed and, you know, would have preferred to just, you know, let's move along rather than waiting till this person comes up to say, oh, hi, how are you? Can my dog say hello? And he would, you know, really have none of that and really insisted, as terriers are good at doing, that no, we're sitting and waiting till the people come over. And it really was a great lesson because I think, you know, if I was just walking myself, be inclined to just, you know, whiz by other people. Or sometimes you'd even cross the street to say, oh, I don't want to talk to her today. Whereas a dog really doesn't tolerate that. And everybody is a potentially important encounter for them to have. And when you really take the time, like your dog, you know, to meet and greet everybody who passes, you really meet some wonderful people. You hear fabulous stories from folks. And then the next time you see them, you know, suddenly it's not, you know, that stranger or the neighbor who lives down the street you've never said hello to. But now, you know, you have an acquaintance who then becomes a friend, because every time you're out walking is another opportunity, you know, to share with that person what's going on with your lives, which is just such an important stress reducer for us to have. And I think for many of us, you know, you walk with that cell phone implanted in your head, talking on the cell phone and ignoring everybody else around you, which, like you're saying, you know, a dog just really doesn't tolerate that behavior and understands that it's so important, you know, to be socially engaged with, you know, with everybody that you can potentially be meeting.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I love the last chapter in the book, which is Live a Dog's Life, which is sort of where you have advice for people on sort of drawing this together and actually how you can change and shape your life to really make the best of those benefits. So what's your advice there?
Well, I think the one thing is, you know, you have a lot of people who will encourage you to, you know, keep a calendar and schedule out your exercise and make sure that, you know, you're getting in your exercise sessions every day, which, you know, is an important thing to do. But unfortunately, we often don't schedule the other important aspects of our lives, like scheduling our sleep, scheduling when we're eating, what we're eating, and, you know, with whom we're eating. So what that book tries to do is to get you to look at, how am I going to schedule all of these aspects of my life so that, you know, I'm really maximizing my health benefits. So, for example, you know, when you are at work during the day and it's lunch break, you could potentially just sit at your desk by yourself and eat lunch, and you could be having a nice, healthy lunch and get that benefit. On the other hand, if you have your lunch, you know, you take that same good, healthy lunch and go to the cafeteria and eat with several of your coworkers, now you've added in the social benefit of also being engaged with those other people as well. So the chapter really encourages you to look at, you know, how are you doing a lot of the different behaviors in your life to really maximize, you know, getting those good health benefits. If you're having trouble connecting with your teenager, you know, make dog walking part of that teenager's chore. And when they get home from school, the two of you can go out and walk the dog together. And it's much easier to chat about what's bothering them when the dog's there than if you're sitting down, you know, grilling them in the living room. So really trying to incorporate a lot of different aspects of your life together. And there's calendars in there that people can use, you know, to try to help, you know, help themselves schedule and make sure they're staying on track.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there's one direction which I really like, and it basically is, don't keep yourself in the doghouse.
Right. And, you know, for a lot of people, they're very good at starting, you know, new programs, whether it's changing your eating habits, changing your sleeping habits, you know, getting involved in an exercise program. And invariably, life happens and, you know, something gets in the way of sticking with whatever program you've set up for yourself. And it's very easy when that happens to say, well, you know, I didn't, you know, go to the gym today, so I guess I'm just done. There's no point in continuing, you know, with that exercise program. And people really can take a very fatalistic view. So what, you know, the phrase don't keep yourself in the doghouse is really suggesting is to understand, you know, yes, you are not going to be perfect. There are going to be times when you are being antisocial. You're not keeping up with your exercising. You're ignoring the dog while he's sitting there with his adorable eyes and the leash. And, you know, don't beat yourself up over that, but say, okay, tomorrow's another day. We'll get back on track. And just, you know, stick with the program. And really, the more people try to engage themselves in healthy lifestyle behaviors, the more benefit that they'll get. And even if you can only do a few things to try to improve your health, those few things can make a huge impact in health benefits. You know, even when people are losing weight, you don't have to lose all of the weight you need to lose to get healthy. You can lose just a small amount and really get big health benefits. So trying to, you know, really pat yourself on the back for those good things that you're doing, not get too upset when you fall short, and just, you know, continuing to plod along in the same way your dog is going to do. He's not going to say, well, I didn't walk on Monday. Guess we'll never walk again. I won't ever ask again. I'll just, you know, sit in my kennel and mope. You know, a dog wouldn't do that, and we shouldn't either.
I think the other thing is, as you say, sometimes we focus on negative things. You know, we'll get 10 compliments, one nasty comment. It's the nasty comment that sticks in your mind. And yet we know when we're training our dog, you know, be positive. We use rewards. We don't, you know, don't punish. And we focus on the good. And if we could apply that to ourselves, that would be so much better for us.
Right. That's actually one of the things I talk about in the book when, I treat patients who have a variety of chronic pain problems, and it's very easy for them to just get very discouraged and say, you know, that there's no hope. I'll be doomed forever. And we really encourage them to give themselves, you know, very positive messages. And, you know, when they're feeling stressed or, you know, they're confronting a situation that's bad, to just, you know, try to think of a positive way, you know, to tell themselves something about themselves, which usually, you know, decreases their pain levels. And like you're saying, you know, that can be a good stress reliever for all people, whether you have chronic pain or not. And we make a, you know, a big deal about saying, oh, Fluffy, you're so cute. Oh, you're such a good boy. Oh, you were so good about whatever. And if we can give ourselves some of those same kind of statements, it actually really is very helpful. It decreases your stress level. It decreases a lot of the physiological response. It's very negative when we're, you know, feeling negative about ourselves and feeling very stressed. And being able to tell yourself, you know, good things about yourself, you know, whether it's, you know, you've got a tight deadline at work, and just to be able to tell yourself, you know, look, I always have met deadlines in the past. I've broken this down into small amounts. I'm going to get there. You know, today I'm just going to do this amount, and I know I'll do a good job. And just telling yourself that really diffuses the situation. In the same way, you know, if you're telling your dog positive things, you'll usually find that training's going better than just yelling, stop that, stop that, stop that, where the dog looks at you like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't speak human.
Yes. This I do think this is a really interesting book. You know, it's a really different take, you know, and it sort of wraps up all those benefits of having a dog, how it improves our lives. Is there anything else that you would like to tell people about the book?
Well, there was a real neat study that was done a few years ago where they looked at obesity in dogs, which, as obesity is becoming a problem in humans worldwide, it's also becoming a problem in our dogs. Mm. And they tried to identify, you know, what was different about the obese dogs. And what they found was that the obese dogs, they felt, had become humanized. And people were treating them not like dogs, but trying to treat them like little humans. And it was that change in behavior of trying to make the dogs human that seemed to be the catalyst toward leading to changes in their lives that then led to obesity. So what the book really tries to do is to flip that around and say, you know, if dogs become less healthy when we treat them like humans, maybe if we treated ourselves more like a dog, you know, used that positive attitude like the dog, looked at the importance of play and sleep like a dog does, then we can get those same health benefits that a dog does by treating ourselves in the way that a dog would encourage us to do, rather than, you know, those very unhealthy human behaviors that, you know, it's just very easy to adopt.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that saying is true then, isn't it, about, you know, if you sort of treat your dog like a human, they'll start treating you like a dog. But in this light we're looking at it, that's a good thing, isn't it? Because we,
yes,
there are many benefits to living like a dog. So, and so I've never come across a book that's sort of wrapped it up in this way before. So it's a brilliant book.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, one of the fun little sections in there is to shop like a dog, which I really found fun. Because it's interesting, if you go to the store to buy, you know, food for the dog, it's a real different experience than going to the store to buy our food. And I know in our grocery store, there's, you know, a few aisles that are actually nutritious food. And then most of the store is just, you know, junk food or sugary foods or high fat food. I mean, there's just aisles and aisles and aisles and aisles of that. And in the dog store, it's just such a different experience because they have, you know, the rows of actual nutrition food. Then there'll be, you know, the single aisle of the little dog treats, which are always very teeny little treats that you give them when something very exciting and special has happened. You don't give it to the dog because he's having a bad hair day or, you know, he's feeling stressed or, you know, he had a rough day at work. He doesn't get a treat. But really, it's, you know, for the extraordinary thing, you get that occasional treat. And then there's a couple of aisles that are more play items and then comfort items, like the little stuffed animals and blankets. So if we use those same, you know, looked at our grocery store in the same way and said, I will be visiting the nutrition aisles for my food. And then if I want something, you know, a treat for myself, because, you know, every so often I need that special little something to get, you know, the very small, you know, little bits of treat, you know, if it's like a little bite-sized something, rather than I'll get, you know, pounds and pounds of chocolate to take and gorge.
Yeah.
And then to say, and now I'm going to visit a play aisle where I'm going to, you know, instead of getting, you know, the bag of potato chips as my little, you know, comfort when I'm feeling stressed, and instead my stress reliever will be I'm going to get a new ball to play with the dog with or a Frisbee or something. And maybe if I need, you know, some comfort thing, I'll, you know, get a special pillow for my bed at night or whatever. But to really look at it in a way that the dog store is set up, that we're, you know, using food for nutrition, and then when we're feeling stressed or we need some comfort, you know, to use a play item, to use, you know, some, you know, snuggly comfort item rather than, you know, the high sugar, high fat food items that we often turn to, you know, when we're feeling stressed and upset and anxious, which unfortunately just often, you know, makes those symptoms become worse. So there are a lot of different aspects of our life we can really look at and say, you know, what would Fido do in this circumstance, and really make some major changes that are fairly easy to incorporate. And hopefully it's fun to do that if you're thinking about it, you know, from the mindset of your dog.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I should say before we finish, you are an MD, and you are also a professor at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Now, do you actually reveal to your patients that, you know, you're basing, you know, some of the advice you give them on this philosophy of sort of living like a dog can have benefits?
Well, I think actually the advice sort of started with the patients and then, you know, moved into the dog rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
But, you know, clearly if, you know, a patient has a dog or has access to a dog or a neighbor's dog, you know, it's great to take advantage of that because it's very difficult for people to make lifestyle changes, and particularly if they're just doing it in a vacuum, just as the isolated person trying to change you know, change their eating habits, change their sleeping habits, you know, change their exercise habits. It's very, very difficult to do that, particularly if you don't have, you know, a big support system around you willing to make those same changes that you're making, which often people find, you know, the rest of their family or friends are not really willing to do. The dog, however, is always enthusiastic to try something new. You know, if you say, well, now we're going to walk, you know, 3 times a day for 10 minutes. We used to only walk once a day, but now, you know, I've decided to increase it. Your dog is going to be very happy with that and won't say, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Mm. I'm going to miss a TV show. What are you talking about? You know, so really you can use that dog to adopt a lot of those healthy lifestyle habits. And if for patients who have dogs, that's just really a bonus that it makes it easier for them to incorporate those changes.
Yeah, yeah. Dawn, where can people find out more about you?
You can visit my website, which is fitasfido.com. I have a second website, which is dawnmarcusmd.com, which just has medical books on it. But the fitasfido.com is a fun website, which talks about the book. It has links to a variety of dog information. One of the highlights is the celebrity spotlight on the page where we talk to important, famous people about how their lives have improved with their dogs, including Ms. Hill, who has a fabulous interview to be posted. And on that site, you can there are links to order copies of Fit as Fido. You can also order it online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I guess dog owners have known for a long time, you know, having that dog in your life does enhance it. So it's lovely to have someone who's produced a book to really celebrate that.
Yeah, thank you so much.
If you would like to discover the lessons about living well that you can learn from your dog, visit fitasfido.com via the link on the Dogcast Radio site. And as Dawn mentioned, on that site, if you look in the celebrity spotlight section, you can read how living with Buddy has improved my life. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. A study showed that visits from therapy dogs lowered anxiety, stress, and heart and lung pressure in heart failure patients.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick. I'm on my own this week. Kate's not too well right now, but hopefully she'll be better soon and will be back with us next time. We have a cliffhanger of a start for you in this episode with the story of an Irish Springer Spaniel, Laddie, who fell 130 feet down a cliff and ended up trapped in a cave. Laddie's family, who are on holiday on the Antrim coast, searched for him, but after 8 days passed, had given up hope. However, going home without their dog was unthinkable. On Easter Sunday, a sailor spotted the dog on the rocks and notified the Coast Guard. With just an injured leg, a raging thirst and hunger, Laddie was soon winched to safety. And on the subject of dramatic airborne rescues, a man from Australia and his Irish setter were walking by a fast-flowing river when the dog tried to swim. Seeing his pet was stuck on a rock in the middle of the river, the man decided to rescue him and became stranded too. The man's wife reported him missing, and teams from the Queensland Fire and Rescue Service soon located him, but the river was too dangerous even for them to risk crossing. The only solution was a helicopter, which was able to winch the pair to dry land. Dog owners in the Spanish city of Gerona have been told they must give their dogs at least a 20-minute walk daily, or risk a fine of up to €400. That's just over $500. In an effort to ensure that dogs have a good standard of living, authorities will also be handing out fines for owners who leave their dogs home alone or tethered for long periods, those who keep them in cramped conditions, dogs running free inappropriately or being allowed in public fountains, ponds or streams. Now, guide dogs do a marvellous job, enabling blind and partially sighted people to find their way around. Now, a new British invention will make their task a little easier. A satellite navigation device attaches to the dog's harness and communicates to the handler which way to go through vibration. Normal sat-navs are not suitable for the blind, but the new system and the guide dog together provide the perfect combination. The device has proved such a success that its inventor, Jason Parkins, has been nominated for the James Dyson Award for Excellence in Design. Now, finally, do you know what a Chalky is? Well, it's a Chihuahua Yorkshire Terrier cross, and a Chalky could well be the smallest dog in Britain. Tiny Tilly measures just 8 inches from nose to tail, and her owners have been told she has stopped growing. But Tilly's title is not a sure thing, A Chihuahua Jack Russell cross called Tom Thumb is currently only 4 inches from nose to tail. However, Tom Thumb is just a pup and still has time to outgrow Tilly. While Tilly may be small, she must have a big attitude as she lives with a Japanese Akita as well as 2 other Chorkies. Although Tilly is a petite pooch, she doesn't have a shot at being the smallest dog in the world. That title belongs to a Chihuahua called Heaven Sent Brandy from Florida, USA, who is just 6 inches long. And on the subject of small but perfect packages, that's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Until next time, goodbye.
Dog owners make fewer visits to the doctor. My local Dogs Trust Centre, Roden, is incredibly successful at rehoming dogs. I went along to find out what the daily routine entails. It was early when I arrived. Well, early for me, anyway, as a Dogs Trust day starts at 8:30 a.m. and Vicky was already hard at work cleaning the kennels out.
I'm a canine carer. I just literally look after the dogs, clean the kennels, walk them, and then deal with the public.
Yeah. Okay. Just that.
Yeah, technically. Just that.
So an easy day, really.
It's very easy day, yeah.
So now, you've got a shovel full of something I won't mention. Yeah. So what are you in the middle of at the moment?
I'm cleaning the outside kennels. So I have to clean the poo, clean the sheets, then trigene it, which is antibacterial, hose it, and then scrape it, and then hopefully it'll be clean then.
Right. And how many kennels have you got to do?
I think there's 14 on this block, I think. 14 kennels.
Yeah. So when I'm clearing after two, it's not that bad?
No. No, two would be lovely to work with.
Okay, do you want me to? I'll just tag along with you.
Okay, that's fine.
Oh, some of them have been quite clean, then.
Yeah, we've got a few empty kennels on here at the moment.
Oh, right.
We're getting some new dogs in tomorrow.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So the dogs have got inside and...
Inside and outside, yeah.
Yeah. And so these are dogs that have just come in,
have come in recently over the past week.
Yeah.
And then they stay on this block for 7 days.
Yeah.
Until they've seen the vet, make sure we haven't got any diseases, let them settle in, and then they'll move to be rehomed.
Yeah.
Once we've assessed them, really.
Yeah. How long have you been here?
Only 7 months.
Yeah.
So I'm still new.
Do you like it?
Oh, I love it. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Really good job.
What's sort of the hardest thing?
Cleaning, really.
Yeah.
Because it's quite back-breaking.
Yeah.
But after cleaning's done, it's brilliant because you just walk the dogs and you just enjoy the job, really.
Yeah.
It's a really good job.
Yeah. Do you find that you bond with some of them?
Very much so, yeah. You get very attached. Yeah. Very attached.
Yeah. So it must be like mixed feelings?
Yeah, it's emotional in the sense that they go in, but it's good because they're getting home.
Yeah.
So it is mixed feelings.
Yeah, yeah. So you've gone in and cleared the poo. We've got all the bedding out.
Yep.
So
I'm now going to trigene it.
Right.
Chuck trigene on to kill all the bacteria.
So while Vicky carried on banishing germs, I got out of the way of all that sloshing and went to talk to Gemma, another canine carer. I opened with a stupid but necessary question. What are you doing?
What am I doing? Hosing the kennels.
Right.
Basically, on a Friday, we lift all the grids, hose all the rubbish off the grids.
Yeah.
And just hose all the rubbish out of the kennel and that.
Yeah.
Get right. Clean.
So is that done before you do the...
No, they'll chuck the disinfectant on and then you hose it all out.
So the dogs don't get into contact with it. Right, so you sort of work as a team, somebody doing one job and you follow it.
Yeah, because Vicky's helped me, obviously, clean the inside of the block and then she'll go over and help Steve clean the outside. So.
Right.
Share the help around.
Yeah, right. And the dogs on this side are the ones that are going home, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long, on average, would they spend sort of in this block?
Depends on the dog. Sometimes a day. Sometimes you'll have a dog that's got home but it'll have kennel cough, so it can't go home for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So it just completely depends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not usually that long.
No.
No.
Because once they're... So do they move here sort of once they're reserved or once they're definitely going?
Once they're definitely going, they'll move in here. Unless it's a dog that gets asked about all the time, as soon as there's somebody interested, it'll get moved on here out of the way. Because obviously when you've got one certain dog that everybody's asking about, it's like...
Yeah, if it's popular.
Yeah.
And how long have you worked here?
About 4.5 years now,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah. So you obviously like it.
Yeah, yeah. I do. Except when it's cold.
Yes.
But yeah, I do.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the best bit of the job here?
Sending the dogs home.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'll go home.
Yeah. And what's the worst bit?
Seeing some of the dogs we get in when they're really scared and and just kennel life, they're scared of being in kennels and that kind of thing. It's hard for them.
Yeah, yeah. So what would... You started at 8:30, did you?
Yeah.
So what's a typical day like?
Clean until break, lab break, and then it's all walking most of the day then.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting the old dogs out of the kennels and that.
Yeah, so making sure they have like a good...
Yeah, well, they all get out the kennel and they either go in an exercise run for an hour or they'll have a walk out of the field.
Yeah, yeah.
But they all go.
So it's all go then?
Yeah.
But yeah.
All go all day. Yeah.
Until?
Half past 5 we finish. Yeah. But obviously with this block, I've got the dogs going home as well, so I have to sort them out and do leads and collars and all that kind of stuff for them too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So do you sort of have to talk to the people going home with them, or do you not have contact with them?
When they'll have a pre-adoption talk this morning, somebody will give them advice on how to settle the dog in, and then they'll shout for me saying the dog's ready to go. So I'll get the dogs, take them off, and I'll tell the people what they're fed on and help them put the dog in the car, and then off they go.
And off I went to talk to Steve, who is known in the kennels as Steve 1, and is not to be confused with Steve 2, who will be coming up later.
We're in the middle of cleaning here.
Yes.
So is this a daily thing?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
On a Friday, we lift all the grids up and we do all the drain buckets and everything as well on it. It's something that has to be done because in this sort of environment, disease can spread quickly.
Yeah.
So we have to keep on top of that, especially with the new dogs that come in. We don't know what they're carrying, basically. Yeah. So the vet comes in 4 times a week. So if we've got any problems whatsoever, they get seen straight away. If we have an emergency, we've got 3 vehicles on site and we can whip them straight over to the vet, so there's no problems there.
Yeah.
So we're pretty lucky. You know, we've got a good setup.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So you start at 8:30 as well?
Yes.
Is that right? So what would your day pan out like after that then?
Once we finish cleaning, which usually takes about 2 hours.
Yeah.
You then start getting your dogs out. I mean, on this block, when the new dogs come in, they can't be walked.
Yeah.
For the first 5 to 7 days, purely to keep an eye on them, let them settle down. So if they've got any either behavioural problems or medical problems, we can monitor that very closely.
Yeah.
So they go out in concrete runs, which means they do go out, they get exercised, but they can't go for the walks. Once they've been given the all clear, after the 5 to 7 days, then we can walk them around, we move them off the block, and they get put on show so the public can see.
Yeah.
In between all that, you just basically walk, you help other people. You do training with some of the dogs if they require it. You try and socialise some of them, especially the puppies, because they haven't got a clue, bless them.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know where a lead is or how to play properly. So, I mean, others are just very scared or they've been, you know, misabused and all this, which is not pretty on some of them.
No.
So, you know, you just work. Well, with whatever it throws at you, you have to work with it.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean... Yeah. But, well, as I say, we're lucky because we've got a behaviourist and we've got 2 trainers on site.
Excellent.
So if we get stuck, we've got backup. Yeah.
So it must be wonderful when you, as you say, if you get one in, particularly who's sort of a bit frightened or has whatever problem, and you see that progression, don't you?
This is it. I mean, if we get some bad ones that really don't want to know people, you know, we'll sit in the kennel three times a day for about 20 minutes of time, just hot dogs, sausages, treats, you know, anything like that. And they do come round eventually, now, but it takes time. You just have to have patience. You don't push them. They'll come to you when they're ready.
Yeah.
And you just have to work with that. So, you know, it's a great reward to see them sort of come in absolutely scared stiff and then walk out of here as proud as punch. So, it's great. Yeah. You wouldn't stop it.
I've just walked down this block, and obviously, as you say, there's some that are sort of going, not sure about you, and pulling back. And then, for example, I mean, there's a lurcher that's sort of doing a very quiet lurcher-style hello I'd quite liked, you know. And there's a German shepherd down the bottom that's just begging to come out.
Sort of, take me out.
What do you find hardest? The ones that sort of go, not sure, you know, to walk past and keep walking if you're not doing something with them. Which ones get to you more? The ones that are there going, take me out now, or the ones that are going,
They all have their individual characters. It's always there because someone will automatically come up and they'll hit you like a ton of bricks and you go, okay, you know, we want to play. And there's others will come up and they'll just gently nudge you and they all just get under your skin. You know, we all have our favourites. But so you try and share it out equally amongst all of them. If you've got some that come in there, absolutely fine, you know, they're not really bothered, they just want to get on with life. Fair enough, that makes your job a little bit easier. But as I say, the ones that are the scariest, and you know, they're the ones you need to work with a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And you said 4 times a week the vet comes down?
Yes.
And so if you've got any concerns?
Yeah, we take those in to see the vet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the new ones, when they come in, the vet will see all of them.
Yeah.
And they'll get wormed, they'll get fleed. If they need eye treatment, ear drops, or anything like that, then it's prescribed there and then.
Yeah.
We don't have to wait for it. So we can start the medication straight away.
Yeah.
I mean, all our dogs, they're fully vaccinated. They're wormed and fleed, microchipped. If anybody takes a dog on, they get 6 weeks free veterinary insurance with Pet Plan as well.
Excellent.
Brand new collar and lead.
Yeah.
Full medical printout of any treatment they've had done here.
Yeah.
All the vaccination certificates. And the one thing I like to say to people is that as long as you keep the dog, whether it's 6 months, 6 years, 12 years down the line, you can call us anytime should you have any problems.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're not left on their own to sort of struggle like a lot of centres do, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we're here to help.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is one of our biggest successes, is we don't give people dogs and say, it's your problem now.
Yeah, get on with it, sink or swim.
That's it, you know, so we're here for them at the end of the day, so.
Yeah. And how long have you worked here?
8 years.
Oh, wow, right.
Yeah.
So you like it?
Oh, yes. I wouldn't go into a factory now.
No.
I spent 25 years in a factory, so.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go back.
No. It must just be so rewarding.
It is. As I say, you see them coming scared and you see them march out proud as punch. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. So. What's the best bit of the job?
I think it's just working with the animals.
Yeah.
You have to have a love of animals. You say, if you don't care, don't work here.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. You know? And luckily all the staff do.
Yeah.
You'll most probably walk around the kennels and you'll hear silly voices coming from the kennel. And it's the staff.
Yes.
You know, yeah, what's it? So you'll meet a complete bunch of lunatics around here.
Well, I shall fit in then.
But I mean, they all mean well.
Yeah.
And they all work hard, so.
Yeah.
They do indeed work hard. I was tired just watching. Over in another block, Thomas was getting breakfast ready for the dogs.
So you're doing the feeding?
Yeah.
What's the powder that you're putting in?
It's the worming treatment.
Oh, right, OK.
So the ones on that block, they just come in, they did last, I think it was on the 18th.
Yeah.
So they will be worming, it's the last day of their worming treatment now.
Right. So that's just to make sure that they...
That they haven't got any worms, basically, and they were fleed as well one day they came in.
Yeah. And are they all fed the same thing?
We try to feed them all the same thing, unless they've got specific dietary needs, and then the food does get changed for them.
Yeah.
But we generally try and get them all on the same feed.
Yeah. So you've got your schedule there, of sort of who gets what and what.
Yeah, absolutely.
So presumably, for example, if you got one that needed feeding up,
They go normally like, we've got thin, they're normally on 2 meals, like Cara there. She's on 6 small ones because she's
great hair.
She's smaller but more meals to try and feed her.
Yeah.
Being stuck in a kennel is obviously very boring for a dog, and a lot of effort goes into entertaining them and providing exercise. Thomas also showed me the special exercise areas, complete with toys. But the dogs were so noisy at that point, he can't be heard above them. Then Emma arrived with the dog, so I asked her where they'd just come from.
He's just come back from the vets. He was castrated yesterday. So he stays over for 24 hours and then gets picked up the next morning. So he's feeling sorry for himself, very hungry, and a bit shell-shocked still.
So you've been to pick him up?
Yes, yeah. Do a swap, take a new lot, and then bring back the ones from yesterday. So bless him.
Are there sort of specific members of staff that drive the vets?
You need to have done your 6 months probation. There are some that aren't comfortable driving the huge ambulance.
Yeah.
That's not a problem. You get used to it. You can't go quick, so take your time.
I imagine it's better than picking up the poop with a shovel.
Well, I did that bit before I went.
Right,
so.
Okay.
There were 2 dogs came back and I took 3 over.
Oh, right.
One for spay, one for castrate, and one to have his eyes checked, bless him. So they'll be
and
back.
And when will you get back, get those?
They'll either come back this afternoon or tomorrow, depending on how well they recover from the anaesthetic.
Right. So if somebody comes in and says, as you say, wants to have a look at the dog, how's that handled? How do you do that?
The first thing they need to do is register with us, which is filling out a questionnaire so that we know what they're looking for, and if they like any of the dogs, we can make sure they would be suitable. Most of our dogs have come from stray kennels, so we don't have history on most of them. Instead, we need to do an assessment which sees what they're like with handling, around their food, around their toys, what they're like with other dogs, what they're like for the vets, and we can work out what sort of home they need. So, assuming a dog's suitable, then the family will go out with a member of staff, go for a little walk. We can tell them more, show them the dog. If they're happy, then they'll go for a little walk on their own or go into the little room that we've got, which is the meet and greet, where they can spend some time. So that gets done. We need to do a home visit before the dog goes home. There's also any medical procedures it needs, such as spay, castrate, or any extras, any scans that they need.
Right.
Then they have a pre-adoption talk before they go home, which explains how to settle them in. And it's a big thank you for taking the time to come down to us and take a rescue dog.
Is that Steve, the trainer?
It's with Steve, the behaviourist, or Jane or Lorraine, the trainers.
All right, okay.
So they do that. It takes about half an hour and covers just about everything that you can think of. So from generally, from first coming in to finding a dog, if you find the dog that you're after the first day, then you're looking at a week to 10 days at the most.
So it's quite quick, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't do them any good. We're a big kennels and the dogs get very, very stressed.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're not sleeping properly, they don't eat properly, that they need to get out and get into a routine. A lot of them will go home and sleep the entire afternoon, bless them. Yeah. So.
While I was at Dogs Trust, there was also a special photo shoot going on.
I'm standing there right by the lake at Dogs Trust and trying to do a photo shoot of all the dogs that need to go in a pair or a triple, as you can hear. It's pretty noisy. And there's some dogs that don't really want to be that close to other dogs. And it's getting them all in, and it's not an easy job.
I found out about some of the Bichon Frise dogs involved in the photo shoot who already had a home to go to.
So these Bichons were only in 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Wow. And then they were snapped up?
Snapped up, yeah. I mean, they had a home to somebody was interested with cats, but they unfortunately didn't get on with the cat. But then somebody else was interested, so yeah, they're going home tomorrow.
What's the average length of stay?
Completely depends on the dog.
Yeah.
Completely depends. Obviously, you've got the two staffies over there who are perfect, but because they've got to go together, people get put off by that, you know, but there's no reason why they should be here, and it just depends what people fancy when they walk around, to be honest. There could be a fantastic dog here for longer than it should be, so just don't know.
After the photos were finally taken, and you can see my photos of the shoot on the Dogcast Radio site, I went off to Sue, who was in charge of one of the more energetic inhabitants of the shelter.
Yeah.
So you're about to walk Lewis,
yes.
Who's a greyhound.
He
says, I'm a really sweet boy, but you're expecting fun putting the harness on.
He's very energetic, and he's just very excited that he's going out on a walk.
Yeah.
Once he's out of the kennel and on the walk, he's lovely, and he'll just plod by my side.
Oh,
but it's just
bless.
That initial, yay, I'm going out.
Oh, so, so it's just after 11:15 in the morning. So what's your day been so far?
Busy. There's been lots and lots of cleaning. mostly just cleaning, and we've walked a couple of dogs as well, and then had the photo shoot.
Yes.
And then just come back down after a cup of tea to walk some more dogs. Continue walking them throughout the day. Some of them have midday feeds at lunchtime if they're underweight or if they're very stressed. And then, yes, carry on walking them. At the same time, we've got the grass runs.
Yeah.
So we've been putting dogs in and out of there so they get time out there as well. So, because there's a few members of staff in today, hopefully they'll all get out quite a few times today, which is nice. Yeah, so we just walk all the dogs, and then in the afternoon is just making up more feeds for the evening, and then they all get fed and put to bed, and everything's cleaned and topped up again.
Yeah.
And then it's home time, and then we come in tomorrow and do it all again.
Okay, you're going to put his harness on there? Do you want to go away?
Yes. Well, it won't make much difference.
Okay,
really.
Okay. Well, I might as well appreciate the fun of it then. I might as well. Oh, bless you.
There we go. Trying to walk away from the poo. So they try not to jump in.
Oh, well done. It's nearly, it's a bit like a dog versus human wrestling match in a nice way.
Pretty well dressed.
Oh, well done. It's on. Well done.
Lewis got rid of those high spirits in the exercise area, which was a joy to see. The centre had a lot of support from volunteers. I spoke to Linda, who's a long-term supporter, and as you'll hear, she was out and about walking dogs despite the steady rainfall.
Been coming for quite some time now, but I've been fortunate because I've been allowed to deviate from just the dog walking. And the little dog that I've just taken there, Rusty, is one of the problem dogs. And I've developed a relationship with him and built up some trust, so that's really nice, you know what I mean? And it's nice for, because it gives the staff a break. I can spend more quality time with him.
Yeah.
Just sort of sitting chewing the fat with him, if you like. Whereas, you know, the staff have got like, the job to do and they're backwards and forwards. And I've started, funnily enough, I've started to... I'm taking over doing the voluntary induction for volunteers. I'm doing my first one this Sunday. And I'm just doing finishing off the first newsletter that we're doing from here as well. So that's what I'm saying. I've sort of slightly deviated from the norm. But my true love's obviously coming and sitting with the dog. We're getting wet and dirty. You know.
Even
though it's an unpaid job, it's the first job I've had in my life where you can go as dirty as you like and nobody cares. You know, you don't have to even have a wash. Nobody knows. It's just a different. So yeah, it's lovely. It's really good fun. I managed to get onto the Shropshire Radio a couple of weeks ago. They were talking about volunteers. They're talking about volunteers, and so I managed to get on and throw him a threepenny worth it, because any publicity is good publicity, isn't it? And I think it's, you know, they're actually talking about people losing their jobs, and someone had suggested that people could do voluntary work as a means back into themselves. And I think someone said something like, well, you don't get paid for that. But conversely, A, you're not spending money whilst you're here. But also, I mean, I cancelled my... I did give membership to cancel because I don't need it any longer.
No.
You know,
get out and walk a dog.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
And even in this sort of weather, it's, you know, it's nice.
And you, I mean, you must see the benefit to the dogs that you spend time with.
Well, yes, that's the thing. I mean, when the dogs come back with, you know, with where they've been rehomed, you know, they come back with the people, all of the staff get really excited, and I sort of join in with that. And I think since I've been, because I'm allowed to walk with the public now as well with the, you know, the dogs, which is really good. So if you sort of hone in on somewhere you think that this particular dog might go somewhere, because I can spend that little extra time with them, I think it's possibly that little bit of an extra shove where people are not really, you know what I mean, where they're sort of... that they're sort of waving, so because I've got the time to do that. If needs be, you see, I can just spend 2 hours with one.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think it's going to be some sort of use. So, get
to. So you'd recommend volunteering?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, definitely.
There's still so much to tell you about the centre. The house devoted to oldies, the puppy block, the interesting views of the resident trainer, and more. All of which you'll be able to hear in the next episode of Dogcast Radio. In the meantime, you can find out more at the Dogs Trust website. Dogs improve our physical health, encourage us to take more exercise, and lower the chances of us becoming depressed. Does your dog love you? I'm pretty sure I know what your answer to that question is, but according to author John Katz, no, he doesn't. Dogs may seem to love us, but actually they are merely demonstrating behaviour that gets them what they want, food, fuss and so on. Katz is also firmly of the opinion that dogs don't miss their owners and are happy as long as someone is looking after them. I would strongly disagree with most of this. While our dogs, a Labrador and a Bichon, seem perfectly happy with their backup pack when we are on vacation, my mother had a German shepherd who would pine dreadfully for her, despite being in his own house with people he knew well, one of whom was me. The moment she returned, all was right in his world again. Does your dog miss you? If you have something to say about him pining or not noticing you've gone, I'd love to hear it. What about dogs who know when their owners are coming home and behave differently? They are aware their owner is somewhere else and are so in tune with them they detect the moment their person is homeward bound. Maybe I'm just a big softy, who has convinced herself that her dog loves her because he likes to be near her whenever possible, seeks affection and attention when there is no possibility of food involved, and watches sadly from the window as I reverse off the drive without him. How can you define love? How many relationships could we describe as one or both of the parties displaying the behaviour that they have learned gets them what they want? That's how it may look on the outside, but what does it feel like on the inside? Until we can know that from a dog's point of view, I will continue to believe and assert that my dog loves me. And one thing's for sure, he'll never tell me otherwise, will he? Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Why is a dog like a baseball player? He runs for home when he sees the catcher coming.